Rokan Show, right here on 720 WGN Chicago. Kim Fox, the Cook County State's Attorney, has just stepped into the studio. Thank you for being here.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. We got a lot to talk about, I think.
Yes,
we have a few things. All right. Let's start with just to clean up the Jussie Smollett thing. On Monday, obviously, the Jussie Smollett was then indicted, right?
Tuesday. Yeah.
By the Office of the Special Prosecutor here, Dan Webb. And I know people have been asking you questions about the Jussie Smollett thing. You've consistently said we'll wait for the report to come out. Report has not yet come out.
Yeah.
Can you react to the indictment?
You know, I think he looked at the facts, the evidence, and the law as we had previously, and decided that there was sufficient evidence to bring charges.
So let's go back to that. If you could do it over again, what would you do differently?
You know, I've talked extensively about this. I certainly would want people to know how we do our work and the priorities that we have in Chicago, in particular, priorities around violent crime and dealing with, you know, the homicide rate that we're seeing in so many of our neighborhoods and the like. And so explaining to people where our priorities are and that making sure that people understand our limited resources and how we allocate them.
Right. And a lot of people get diverted. Right. I mean,
yes.
That's what we call this when
yes.
you don't have to go to trial.
Yes.
You just but part of that is pleading guilty. Right. Or saying that you or be standing in front of a judge and making an allocution, which says,
sometimes.
I'm sorry.
I mean, we have a wide array of things that we do, and particularly on cases that are nonviolent. Again, we have limited resources in the county, in a county that has a significant violent crime problem.
But this was a heater case, though.
You know, we have, in the month that a lot of attention was given to this case, we had the case of the woman who had a baby ripped from her womb.
Mm-hmm.
We've had cases, in April alone, there were 10 first-degree murder cases that we took to trial. And so I think for us, how we describe, like, significant cases, this was a class 4 low-level felony. I think the heat was the person who was the accused, but the incident itself. But our focus has been and continues to be making sure that we prioritize violent crime and meaningful justice reform.
And I promise I'm going to leave this here at this moment, but because
sure.
we got a lot of other things to talk about. But the fact that he continued to go out
yeah.
and claim his innocence and claim that this whole thing was that Chicago had turned on him and that this was a complete misunderstanding. How do you feel about that?
You know, I can't speak for how people choose to act. I think certainly we would want people to respect our system, respect what this meant to our city. And I can understand the outrage. But at the end of the day, our job, our responsibility is to use our limited resources to go after violent crime.
Do you think that critics of you in this, including me, have been unfair about that?
I think people have. This is a case that has been in the news and then obviously has been, you know, made commercials out of in political season. You know, I think this is a job that's difficult. We make difficult choices every day. And what I would love to see is a lot of attention and focus on the work that our office does, not only on violent crime, but nonviolent crime, criminal justice reform. The fact of the matter is we are a national model. And I think part of the frustration has been the focus on one case out of literally tens of thousands of cases that we see every year.
But you understand why, right? Because it is national attention. There was an amazing amount of heat around this, not just in news here in Chicago, but news and the entertainment complex
yeah.
around the country. And he was saying just constantly out there
yeah, no.
to trying to do dirt on Chicago. And it never felt like there was justice.
Yeah, listen, I can't speak for Mr. Smollett. What I can say is that our office has a tremendous responsibility every day on behalf of the victims of crime. And we had a national reputation in this city for being the false confession capital of the United States. We had a national reputation in this city for gun violence. We had a national reputation. And still do. And
yeah.
so for me, while I recognize and understand people's frustrations, particularly with him and his behavior, my responsibility as the law enforcement official is to handle these cases appropriately. And certainly, again, we welcome the non-political review of how we handle this case. We'll learn the lessons that we should learn from this and do better as a result. But I also have to focus our attention on righting the wrongs of our past, making sure that we're prioritizing our resources and keeping our communities safe.
Okay, and the last question on this whole thing about this part, but you have your own attorneys, your private attorneys that are working for you. It is part of the special prosecutor's office. You know, they're asking you questions. You have your own attorneys. The Cook County taxpayers paying for those attorneys?
My attorney? No. I have a pro bono attorney, Michael Bromwich, who is helping me with this review.
Okay. And you didn't want to use people internally? Could you not use people internally?
You know, our office often uses outside attorneys, depending on the nature of the review and the scope of the work. And this was an extensive scope that involved members of our office, and so we felt appropriate to have people from the outside help us do this work.
And we're talking to Kim Fox, the Cook County State's Attorney. We already dealt with this Smollett thing. Let's move on to how we're going to reduce crime in Chicago. Obviously, one of the issues that we deal with on a national level, the, as you mentioned before, the reputation of Chicago is awful for gun violence and just violence in general. And we have been dealing, you and I both grew up in Chicago, just mere blocks away from each other. And with the, and it has always been a problem. Yeah. This is not new. This is something that has always been an issue. So one of the things that we talk about since you took office, this bail reduction program, right? Bond reduction program, so that people can get the idea here is that nonviolent offenders will have an opportunity to get out and continue on with their lives and then have to come back to court, right? Yep. Eventually and handle it. And in some cases, you do electronic monitoring as well, right? Mm-hmm. So that people go back out. Now, this is not all your office, right?
It's none of our office. Our office doesn't make bail decisions. We make recommendations, but ultimately, a judge is the only person who orders bail.
But is there a sense, because the judge, chief judge at Cook County courts today, is under fire from the Chicago Tribune for the crime stats that have come out from his office. The report that he put out does not appear to be sufficient in terms of its underlying statistics. And the Tribune has been able to get a hold of those statistics and says that the crime problem is worse here than at least Tim Evans is letting on, the chief judge. So, as Cook County State's Attorney, what is your priority in addressing that? What would you look, if you could wave a magic wand here, what would you do?
We've said from the very beginning that pretrial detention should be for those who are a flight risk or a danger to the public. And the reality was we were under a federal consent decree for decades. We had overcrowding in the jails since the early 80s. I remember going to Cook County Jail in 1988 as part of a Scared Straight program, and it scared me straight in a prosecution. I mean, it was...
Guys sleeping on the floors. I produced those TV news reports. Yeah,
And so for us, it was always a matter of people who are nonviolent, who we don't believe are a risk, should be able to not sit in jail just because they can't afford their bonds. And the reality was we had people who were there for low-level nonviolent offenses who had money or bails they couldn't afford, and you had people who were actually driving violence. There are people who, you know that going to jail is part of the cost of doing business and had bond money ready to go. So you had violent people who could pay their way out and nonviolent people who were languishing inside. And so in my ideal world, that jail would be for violent people or those who we believe pose a risk to the public or a flight risk. And people who can await their trial at home should do so.
Okay, so now on the home monitoring, you don't necessarily have to await your trial at home either, right? Because judges can decide to let people leave their homes, right, to go to work or to school or things like that, pick up the kids, whatever it happens to be. But since this, in the last 3 years, since this has gone into effect, there has been a 77% increase in the number of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon the people that are suspects that have been allowed to go to electronic monitoring. 93% increase in criminal sexual assault suspects allowed to go into the accused going into that monitoring. A 292% increase in felons who are caught with a gun, right? So we all know how this happens. The street stop happens. The cops figure out this is a felon and he's got a gun on him. Yep. And they're 300 times more likely to get home monitoring than guys who have pot get arrested for pot, that actually there's more of those guys in jail. I don't understand that. And again, I know that this is judges, but your office works with, I mean, we all know how the system works.
Yeah.
You guys work, you, the prosecutors work sometimes with the defense attorneys and with the judges to try to move people in these directions.
Listen, I think we should be clear. It's across the country, people are looking at bail reform. Even the governor of this state has said in cash bail. And so I think what we are recognizing is that we've had a system that has been broken and trying to find a way to make it fair and just for everyone. And I think the ability to look at data and research and to have that analysis is absolutely critical so that we can compare and contrast what we were doing before bail reform was enacted and make tweaks. And we're talking about, you know, judges being able to use their discretion in addition to a public risk assessment tool, but they have to do both. And if we find that there are areas where we need to shore up, we absolutely should do that. But I don't think we lose in the conversation. I think we have to be very critical of the fact that we had overcrowding for four decades.
Right.
And people, there was data that showed there were people who were sitting in jail awaiting trial, who ultimately those cases may have been dismissed or they pled guilty to crimes they didn't commit.
They were waiting four or six years. Yeah.
They served more time than the offense would have been. And so I think there's the recognition that we need to fix it and make sure that we're letting the right people out for the right reasons to keep our community safe.
I think we're pretty much, I mean, listen, they agree. Everybody's in agreement on that. I've spoken to prosecutors. The Trump family is in agreement on that, right? I mean, it's a strange bedfellows. We all agree on this issue.
Yeah.
But the question is, if that is in fact what our goal is, our streets are still dangerous because if you're letting felons out, gun charges. Well, if somebody's got a gun. Right? This is the biggest problem.
Just to back us up for a second, I think we have to make sure we're talking the same language. For the last 3 years, by CPD's data, violent crime shootings have gone down. We've got a long way to go. 2016 was an awful year. It was an outlier. But every year since 2016, gun crime has gone down. And so I think it's not telling the full picture of where we were. Where were we in 2016 with bail reform? We didn't have the bail reform initiative, and we had 760 people murdered in Chicago, 4,000 people shot. And so this causation versus correlation thing, I think we have to be careful. This stuff is complicated. And to suggest that it is bail reform that has caused a rise in violent crime, when in fact there hasn't been a rise in violent crime, I think is misguided.
Well, we're seeing, I wouldn't say a rise in violent crime, but we had a really bad weekend, right? And so I know this is, I don't want to just cherry pick things here, but these things go in waves, and there's a lot of other factors that go into this.
That's right.
And so let's talk about those factors, because I know you want to tell you, what would you focus on here? Because I know that what your job is part law enforcement and part social work, right? I mean, it's kind of a balance between those two things. So what would you like to see in terms of the causes here? What would you like to address?
It's all law enforcement. We're not actually social work. We're the end of the line of a lot of failed social systems that come into play. And so, you know, what we find in neighborhoods that have the most violence, neighborhoods like the one I grew up in, you know, healthy, thriving neighborhoods don't have as much violence. That's just the way it is. I grew up in Cabrini, then I moved to Lincoln Park. Lincoln Park had different crime than they had in Cabrini. And so when you're talking about neighborhoods on the South and West Side that have been disinvested in for years, where there is high unemployment, low educational attainment, lack of resources to deal with trauma, you've got kids who go to school, and you've got 3, 4, 5, 6 classmates who've been murdered in a year, and they have easier access to weapons than they do mental health treatment. And so I think from our vantage point is, you know, we can process cases, and we will always have a job, but if we're not doing anything to stop the drivers of violence in these communities, we're not going to abate it. And it's not a law enforcement only issue. I think you would hear Superintendent Beck, the mayor, everyone say that if we're going to stop violence in our communities, it is not singularly a law enforcement issue.
Right. I mean, the police will always tell you that they're responding to things, right? There's only so much you can do, and you can get a bunch of kids off the corner, and 15 minutes later, they're back in the corner, and the shooting happens,
right?
I mean, it is an almost impossible situation in a lot of ways. But what do we need to address here in terms of, and we've got about a minute left, and I'm just going to let you, Kim Fox, take it wherever you want to go here, but what specifically would you like to see addressed here? You kind of gave us the umbrella, What would be the first thing?
I mean, I think on a response level, we have to continue to combat gun violence. It's why we created the first of its kind gun crime strategies unit, where we put our prosecutors in police districts working in tandem with law enforcement to build strong cases and find the drivers of gun violence. Where we've put our prosecutors, we've seen an increase decrease in violent crime than where we didn't have prosecutors. So that's one. Second, we have to work with communities that are impacted by violence. They don't want police occupying forces. They want to work in partnership to address the needs that are there. And two, we have to right the wrongs of the past. There are so many communities that don't trust the criminal justice system because of the casual acceptance that we've had of being the false confession capital of the world, or having men like the Watts victims who went to prison for crimes they didn't commit and no one did anything about it for years. And so I think once we show ourselves as good partners, that we appreciate the communities that we serve and that we're there to assist, I think that relationship begins to build and we're able to work on solving these issues together and not in isolation.
Kim Fox is the Cook County State's Attorney, and there is, by the way, an election coming up in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're aware of that, but
I've heard that.
Yes, I have too.